This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour three this morning as we get Brett Hunt going to join us. Tennessee Vols Radio. Big game coming up this weekend in Knoxville. Second time game day is going to be there as they take on Alabama. It's a top 10 matchup in the SEC. Alabama is ranked third and Tennessee is ranked sixth. Been a long time coming for the Vols. They have gone through a number of coaches until they've dialed it up correctly. You know, you had Phil Fulmer there. They went with Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin leaves after one season. They go with Derek Dooley, Vince Dooley's son. Then they go to Butch Jones, and then they landed on Jeremy Pruitt. It was a Nick Saban sort of disciple, but Pruitt gets the team in a little bit of NCAA trouble. And then Danny White, the athletic director, who had been the athletic director at Central Florida, comes in. He hires Josh Heupel, the guy in Orlando. He brings him up. He says, "You had a great year with UCF. Come up here and do some things in Tennessee. Give me this style." It's one of those situations where it's like putting a square peg in a round hole, sort of that cliche. Tennessee was trying to do the exact same thing with different coaches, right? All the coaches would come in, say the different things, and we're going to do things differently around here. But in the end, it was all kind of looking the same. But then at least Josh Heupel, when they made that hire, he was saying, "Look, I'm changing everything. I'm changing the way we do offense. I'm going to see if this is going to work." Very much like Urban Meyer. When Urban Meyer came to Florida, he had that offense with Alex Smith in Utah. And everyone said, "Oh, but in the SEC, that's not going to work." Well, it did. Steve Spurrier was the same way. Trying something different. It's not like the SEC hasn't seen up-tempo offenses before, but the way it's so efficient with Tennessee, it could be a thing where teams are going to look at that and say, "All right, when we play Tennessee, we're going to have to get personnel that betters our chances in beating the Vols, because they can put up 35 in a blink of an eye." Gabe Lax is going to join us to talk about some baseball. We've got game twos going around major leagues today as Houston, Los Angeles, the Yankees, and the Philadelphia Phillies all emerging with game one victories. The Phillies, the last wild card team in, finding some things working for them. They've now won three straight playoff games, swept the Cardinals in two at Busch Stadium, and then beat the Braves, the defending world champions, in game one with Max Fried on the mound. Good pitching matchup today. A pair of righties in Kyle Wright and Zach Wheeler going on in game number two. Nestor Cortez, one of the Yankees' best pitchers in their rotation, if not the best, is going to be pitching game two for the Yankees. They're up one game to none. Clayton Kershaw tonight will pitch again for the Dodgers as well. All right, we got all of that coming up. Brent Hubbs joins us next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, I've been telling you all morning long, there's going to be a lot of good games in college football coming up this weekend, a lot of matchups. Every single Power 5 conference has a top 25 matchup. And the SEC's got a big one in Knoxville as Tennessee, ranked sixth, is taking on third-ranked Alabama, third Saturday in October. But it has been a rivalry that has gone Alabama's way since Nick Saban has arrived in Tuscaloosa. He's 15-for-15 against Tennessee. But this year's Tennessee team is a blast to watch. Brent Hubbs joins us, Tennessee Vols Radio, as he helps us explain the Vols this season as we go up against Alabama and we look ahead to that game. Just as fans to watch SEC football. How are you, Brent?
I'm doing great. Hope you're doing well this morning.
Thank you. It's on our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to them for a quote at progressive.com. All right, so listen, this first question out of the gate is probably a lot to unpack, but I want to give people a sense of Josh Heupel and what hasn't worked for Tennessee for a very, very long time and why this appears to be working now.
Well, I think you got two things. Starting first with Josh Heupel, there's a confidence about him, and the bigger the game, the happier he is. That's not to say he doesn't appreciate playing teams like Akron and getting to play young players and develop them, but as a competitor, former Heisman Trophy runner-up, player at Oklahoma who played in a bunch of big games, he relishes big game matchups. And so I think what you're seeing is you're seeing his football team play loose in big games. They haven't been tight. They weren't tight against Florida. You go back to this game a year ago, Tennessee shorthanded scared Alabama into the second half because they didn't play tight at all. Now, you can argue he's playing with house money, so why be tight, all those types of things. But there's a confidence about this team when they play in big ball games. They're going to let it all hang out. They're going to play aggressively. They're not going to be cautious. The coaching staff's not going to be hesitant. They're going to play guys, and they're going to play young players if they think that's the best opportunity, and they're going to play aggressive. The second thing about this deal right now, it's all about the quarterback play, right? I mean, you look around the country. I mean, look at the top 25 teams. Find me multiple top 25 teams that are not getting good quarterback play. Find somebody in the top 10 who's not getting good quarterback play. You won't find it. Tennessee is finally getting good quarterback play. Hendon Hooker, the transfer from Virginia Tech, who took over the starting job after week two a season ago, has been dynamite since he became a starter. He's been at a different level this year, second year in the system. He's not turned the football over. His legs have been a factor. His arm has been a factor. Tennessee's been super aggressive offensively. That's why they've scored 30 points or more in eight straight football games, as you mentioned, coming in. This is a fun brand of football for fans to watch, and Tennessee fans are certainly optimistic about Saturday, and they're excited about Saturday, in large part due to the offense and Hendon Hooker.
How did that come together? Where did they find Hendon Hooker? How did Josh Heupel know, this is the guy that can run my offense?
Well, this is a great story, because Hendon Hooker was at Tennessee when Josh Heupel got here. Nobody had seen him yet on the practice field. Hooker transferred in January before Heupel arrived in late January after Jeremy Pruitt was fired. So Hendon Hooker came to Knoxville to play for Jeremy Pruitt and Jim Chaney, Tennessee's then offensive coordinator. Josh Heupel comes in, and he looks around his roster and says, okay, we've got this Hooker guy. We've looked at his tape at Virginia Tech. He's kind of been okay. Let's go get another quarterback. They go get Joe Milton from Michigan because they weren't sure if Hendon Hooker was the answer at that point. Hooker doesn't win the job in spring practice. He doesn't win it in fall camp. It's Joe Milton. Milton gets hurt. Hendon comes in, and it just explodes. It just takes off. And the biggest thing that Tennessee's coaching staff has told and really convinced Hendon Hooker of, that is rip it. Play loose. Play for fun. Don't overthink it. Don't overanalyze it. Don't be cautious and check the ball down all the time. Trust that it's going to be there and rip it. And Hendon Hooker has done that in the system, and it's worked very well.
In a sport that has different layers of success, there are schools that say, if we can have a winning record or if we can go to a certain bowl game, we may not have to play for a national title, but we can have a level of success. That given, and given the short tenure that Josh Heupel has, what level is this game against Alabama? It doesn't mean the end of the world if they lose, but they get a lot of currency if they win.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, if they win, they put themselves in a situation where they're going to be in the conversation for a college football playoff spot. Now, they've got a lot of football left to play, but with each win you get, the bigger the stake, the higher the stakes, and the more relevancy you are on the national scene, which helps in recruiting, which helps in all of those things, you know, periphery to playing the game between the lines. I said this to someone earlier this week. Here's where I sum up where this game is this week. For the first time in 10-plus years, Tennessee fans aren't sitting here on a Wednesday morning going, man, I can't wait to get Saturday over with. I just hope that they can keep it close for a half. Hope that the Alabama fans don't take over the stadium at the end of the game. Hope a bunch of Tennessee fans don't sell their tickets to Alabama fans. Let's just don't get anybody hurt. That's the way this game has been for a long time for Tennessee fans. There's been a couple of years where there's been exceptions, but very few. Tennessee's been a double-digit underdog in this game for way too long. Tennessee fans this morning are sitting there going, you know what? This team's got a legitimate shot at being in this football game and having a chance to win this football game. I'm not dreading Saturday. I'm excited about Saturday. That's what Josh Heupel's done in a year and a half at Tennessee, and that's kind of where this game is heading into this game.
All right, that being said, the offense is fantastic, and it's fun to watch. Defensively, they do give up a lot of passing yards. In context, how bad is that, or is it not as bad as statistically as it appears?
Well, the biggest issue for this team has been third long defensively, getting off the field. When you factor in you look at the Florida game, Florida was in that situation nine times, third and nine plus nine times. If you take the third down play and in some of their fourth down conversions after third and nines, Florida stayed on the field for seven of those snaps. They made a first down on seven of those nine possessions or series of downs, if you will. Tennessee's got to do a better job getting off the field. Last week, LSU, Tennessee had them in third and long. nine times, and they converted five of them. Five of their seven third down conversions were third and eight plus. So Tennessee defensively is doing a really solid job on first and second down, right? They're giving up some yards. Yeah. They're going to always give up some yards. They're getting teams in third and long, but they can't get off the field. That's going to be a key stat. If Tennessee can get their third and long defense tightened up, and part of the problem is they played zone in the back end. Their zone windows have been too big. They haven't gotten home with their front four without having to blitz a whole lot. So how does Tennessee play third and long against Alabama this week will be an interesting thing to watch. That stat's going to be a key stat. If they can start winning third and long, defensively, the vibe on this team is going to be much different than it is right now.
What I find interesting is a lot of times teams play Alabama and they say, look, we got to score. We got to score touchdowns. And if we don't, we can't settle for field goals. Alabama can score. And Tennessee, when they get goal to go, they're 100% getting touchdowns. I don't think there's a team in the nation that has that stat.
Yeah, they've been terrific in the red zone. And I'll be honest with you, Tennessee's success offensively changed the way Billy Napier played and called his game offensively, and it changed the way Brian Kelly called his game offensively for LSU. Florida, opening drive of the game, drove the length of the field. Tennessee bowed up, got a stop on third down. Florida's in field goal range. Billy Napier opts not to kick the field goal and take early points and get a lead and settle his team in because he thought field goals are not enough. We've got to score touchdowns. LSU did the same thing on their second possession of the game Saturday when that game was 10-0. Get settled in, Brian Kelly. No, we got to have seven because three is not enough.
Right.
So Tennessee's offense is dictating a little bit of what other teams' offenses are doing. I don't think Nick Saban will do that. I think Nick Saban will kick field goals. I don't think he'll lose his mind that way. But a couple of these coaches that Tennessee has played last year and this year have said, we got to have, three's not enough. So they've not taken guaranteed points. They have chased points early looking for touchdowns. Tennessee's got a couple of key stops in those situations. That's changed the way the game's played out.
Brent Hubbs joins us, Tennessee Radio. Big game against Alabama coming up this weekend. Again, two undefeated teams, two teams ranked in the top 10. Brent, I want to ask you a big picture question, if you don't mind, and just give us an idea. And again, there might be multiple layers here, but this is a program that's got everything that you want. It's got the crowd, it's got the stadium, it's got the setting, it's in the conference, it's in an area of great recruiting. And yet there has been a huge drought here. How has that taken a toll on a fan base that's not used to that, where it's just year after year after year of frustration, finding the wrong guy, not finding the right players, not getting a quarterback play? How has that taken an effect on the fan base that is as passionate as anybody in the country but has not had the stuff at the other end to get them through the season?
Well, it's been frustrating, but this fan base is beyond loyal. I mean, they are beyond loyal to their team. Tennessee football in the state of Tennessee means a ton to a lot of people, not just graduates, not just alumni, but just to the common fan out there. It has been long a staple and a fixture in everybody's life. So they've continued to come, even though it's been of great frustration. That's why they are so passionate, so happy right now, and are trying to soak it all in. You mentioned this earlier. If you lose to Alabama, it's not the end-all, be-all. There'll be great disappointment, but there are some level-headed Tennessee fans who are just happy that this game is not a two-touchdown underdog situation. There's not everybody nationally going, they have no chance to win this game. It's been a long drought. It's been tough. It's been tough for this team not to be competitive against Georgia, and certainly against Nick Saban in Alabama. But they have stayed loyal. They've stayed true. And right now they're really happy because they got a head coach that they think is changing the course of their fortunes and is changing the way a lot of people are playing football in this league.
Fantastic stuff. Brent, thank you so much for joining us. It's going to be a fun one this weekend. Thank you for your time.
I appreciate it, man. Have a great day.
You got it. Brent Hubbs, Tennessee Vols Radio, joining us as Tennessee and Alabama. Just giving an idea. It's easy to – we've done an Alabama thing every year with Nick Saban and what the Crimson Tide have and what they don't. Like, there are now these teams that we don't talk about much that are – like, this Tennessee team is now emerging. And as I said earlier, it's to – you get these – again, Nebraska. Nebraska's a perfect example of this, right, where – the landscape of college football may be changing enough, but after a while, you find yourself in this crevice and you can't get out. Like you get you're always hiring the guy that just isn't good enough, and the players that are coming in are just not good enough. And in the SEC, like, you look around, and this has been, you know, with Tennessee for a while, and it's not just Peyton Manning. I mean, they won a national championship with T. Martin. They didn't win a national title with Peyton Manning. But whether it was Peyton Manning, T. Martin, Heath Shuler, there has been this team has watched in the last 20 years, maybe 15 years. They have watched Florida win a number of national championships, Alabama win them all, but every now and then Auburn would win one, and you're looking about, like, Ole Miss would be playing really good, and they'd be the new flavor of the month, and Georgia just got a national title, and South Carolina would have a number of years with 11 victories with Steve Spurrier, and they're looking around and they see all of this success coming, maybe not national championship, but programs rise. Missouri getting into the SEC title game, like, in its second year in the conference, and Texas A&M with Johnny Manziel are doing big things and getting a lot of national attention. And they look around and they see 100,000 plus stadium, a loyal fan base that fills it, all the tools that you could ask for, all of the level of money that you could want in a program, it's coming, and they look around and they can't get anything to work. Again, Lane Kiffin gives him a spark, but he takes off. You know why he takes off? Because USC is a better job, right? Because USC is a better job. He goes there. And then here comes Derek Dooley, nothing. Butch Jones, nothing. Jermaine Pruitt, whoops, we're getting into some NCAA trouble. And then they take a shot on Josh Heupel. And I say take a shot, it's kind of liberal here because he was so good at UCF. But, you know, you're like, yeah, but would that actually work against what the SEC defenses are, right? Guys that are going in round one of the NFL draft. Would that work? And not just defensive linemen that can get to the quarterback. We're talking about corners and safeties and linebackers and everybody. Just ocean of players that are going to the NFL draft. Well, right now, it's really looking good. And he's right. Napier and Kelly were making nervous decisions about what Tennessee's offense would do. Saban is not going to do that because he has an offense that can do it as well. But, man, this offense is clicky good, man. It clicks, it rolls, it picks up big yardage on big plays, and Hendon Hooker throws a beautiful pass. I mean, he throws a beautiful ball. But they're set. This is the 17 drives Tennessee has had that has left them goal to go. So these are not 30-yard touchdown passes or 50-yard touchdown passes. I mean, drives that got them to a position where the down and distance was X and goal, first and goal. And every single time they've had that on the board, they've scored a touchdown. They have not had one field goal or one turnover in any drive that had a goal-to-go situation within the drive. That's incredible. Because get this, the touchdown rate nationally in college football is 76%. Tennessee is 100. There's no team that's perfect. And there's no team that's got 10 or more goal-to-go possessions that led to touchdowns. And Tennessee has 17 of them. So when you watch this game this weekend, if you watch this game this weekend, pay attention to this offense because it's that good. We'll talk baseball with Gabe Lax coming up as well as we continue its Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, again, thanks to Brent Hubbs, Tennessee Vols Radio. Can you imagine losing the Alabama 15 straight years because you have to play them in a protected rivalry? Like, Florida doesn't have to play Alabama every year. Georgia doesn't have to play Alabama every year except for the SEC title game if they get there. Like, you get a little bit of a rotation where you'll play them, but then you don't have to play them every single year. No matter what you do, I hate to say this because I'm going to sound like a participation trophy person, and I don't want to sound like that guy. But this is one of the things that I worry about with college football from an expanded playoff level. Like, I don't want these games to be watered down. Does that make sense? Like, I want this game to matter. Like, I want Penn State, Michigan to matter. Like, not two teams that are, like, Buffalo and Kansas City. We were just talking about this last hour, right? Buffalo and Kansas City, they played last year. I have no clue what the circumstances of that game was last year when they met during the regular season. But I remember the playoff game, right? So on the one hand, you would have a Tennessee-Alabama game, for example, or a Michigan-Penn State game, or a Utah-USC game this weekend. You would have it so that these are good teams, they should be in the playoff, et cetera. They'll meet again, maybe. All right, that's fine. I got it. here's the twist, though, right? Here's the twist. I want there to be a feeling of importance to these regular season games, not it's just another step en route to a good season. Whoever loses this game is not out of the national championship picture by any means. It's one loss. If you run the table, you're gonna go to the playoff. If Tennessee loses this game, but they win the rest of their games, they're going to the SEC title game, and if they win that, they're going to the playoff. Alabama, same thing. If Alabama loses this game, they will run the table. They will go to the SEC title game. They win that, they will go to the playoff. So it's not that. But I love these games of urgency. I love these games of importance. And I want there to be a feeling like it has value. But I also know that there are different levels of success, as I was mentioning to him. Because if you say to a Tennessee fan, how big is this game this weekend? And they go, oh, it's everything. That's not really true. It's not really true. It's not everything. Like I said, you can lose, run the table, and go play for the national title. But in reality, a team that has been sort of a problem team where they haven't found the right formula and has not been in the conversation as one of the better teams in the country, they haven't been like that for a long time. This game isn't that. It's a step in what Josh Heupel is building there. Now, for Alabama, yeah, they've won 15 straight. They are coming off a national championship loss to Georgia, but they were at least in the championship game. They've won so many titles under Nick Saban. Yeah, there's a feeling of, wait a minute, hold on. We've been in three close battles this year, or you could say three close battles, maybe two and a half, and we just lost. But for Tennessee, if they lose this game and they make it a fight with Alabama, It's a building block en route to where they're heading now. Now, Michigan, Penn State, I don't think you can say that about Michigan, Penn State, right? I think James Franklin has had more time in Happy Valley to get that organized and get that set, bring in the right people, to be competitive, to be a top 10 football team. Michigan, the same thing. They're coming off a playoff last year. They've got the right quarterback in McNamara. This should be a game in which both teams, there's not one team that's climbing its way out of a hole. Right? These are two teams that over the years have been very good, and now we're meeting because they're both very good. That's not the case in this one. This is the case where Alabama has been good, and the other one, it's they're having a moment in the sun, and it's a good moment in the sun. Right? I mean, Syracuse and North Carolina State. Well, we kind of buzzed about North Carolina State this year. They were one when we did our ACC preview. Yep, it's about Clemson, but, you know, North Carolina State is Wolfpack have a very good team. Syracuse has come out of nowhere, absolutely nowhere. Their coach was on the hot seat at the beginning of the season. Dino Babers was on the hot seat at the start of the season because they've been now they're 5-0, and they're ranked 18th in the country. Syracuse. All right, what you know? Both of these teams. North Carolina State has a loss, but Syracuse is unbeaten. Is that for national championship consideration? Well, we'll see how it plays out. They've obviously, you know. Syracuse would have to beat Clemson at some point. But Alabama-Tennessee, the winner of this game, is going to be a top five football team. Alabama already is. And have a drive towards being in the national championship playoff. Now, I don't know if Utah-USC is that, because Utah's lost twice already. USC, yes. Utah, very unlikely. But still, it's a top 25 matchup in the Pac-12. So these are really good. And as I said many times, man, I'm glad we have preseason polling. I'm glad we don't wait till the end of October before we start getting the committee rankings. I kind of like to know where everybody thinks these teams are. I know it's subjective, and you can make the argument, and fan bases lose their mind because they should be 7th when they're 9th, or you know they should be 10th when they're 11th. I get it. It's part of the game. It's part of the joy. It's part of the arguments. But when you get the sense of giganticness from these games, like how important these games are because of those numbers, it really does put in perspective where these teams are, you know, are coming from. USC is absolutely fantastic, but Utah can beat them. I mean, Utah's had two losses, but that is still a really, really solid football team. All right, we're going to talk to Gabe Lax coming up next. We're going to talk some baseball as we head into Game 2 of the Divisional Series.
You're locked in on the Sports Map Radio Network. Brought to you by Saturday's huge night of fights, headlined by the Bronze Bomber Deontay Wilder versus the Nordic Nightmare Robert Hellenius. Don't miss the hard-hitting action this Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, live on Fox Sports PBC pay-per-view. Order today. Now, back to the show.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, game one in the books for the divisional series. We got game two today. Gabe Lax joins us, USA Today, on our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com. How are you, Gabe?
Doing good this morning. How you doing?
I'm great, my man. All right, so let's talk about the one team that won yesterday. That's the Philadelphia Phillies. This was the last wild card team to get in, and yet they swept St. Louis in two games and now take game one against the Braves. What is working for the Phillies? And by the way, where did they come from? Because I know they fired their manager in the middle of the season.
You know, and it doesn't just seem like a reason. It feels like they've been pushing this boulder up the hill for about 4 years and have never quite. Yeah, I mean, you look at their win totals, they're always around 82 wins, 84 wins right there. You know, they're always in it until about the last week. And this year looked very much the same. And it's kind of funny. Talk about a beneficiary of the new format. You know, you see this with a couple of teams. They didn't really do anything much different this year, but the playoffs kind of came to them, you know. When you look at the Phillies, a couple other teams, the Mariners, I mean, I think they would have been in anyway, but they're finally getting some reliable bullpen work from a lot of guys that you would not have figured to, you know, would be doing that. In terms of this year specifically, Castellanos was kind of cold all year, three two out RBI hits, an amazing catch. Yeah, to me, I think it's really the bullpen that's been covering those outs. When you talk about guys like Jesus Alvarado, Zach Eflin, he, you know, really nice stroke of luck. He got hurt, and his injury dictated that he didn't have enough time to come back to start. So they're like, all right, we'll toss you in the bullpen. And now he's pretty much their closer, you know. So a lot of funny little happy accidents like that have occurred. And they're playing really great right now. So it's they've always been there. They've just kind of been loitering right on the perimeter, and now they're, you know, the little things are finally starting to come together for them.
Let's go to the Yankees and the Cleveland Guardians series. And there was a lot of talk about Aaron Boone. Should he start Nestor Cortez in game one? He went with Garrett Cole. Cole performs. Now they've got Cortez going in game two. The situation there was this a real debate given the circumstances, or was he always inclined to go with Cole in game one?
Yeah, I think the latter part of that is more it. You know, I mean, maybe you wait to see who you're playing. Maybe you run a few things through the old analytics Vegematic. But yeah, I mean, it's still Garrett Cole. You know, he still led the major leagues in strikeouts. He maybe hasn't been exactly as they might have wanted, given the amount of money and the commitment to him, but he's still a really great pitcher. And you kind of have to have that guy that you consider your Hoss, you know. And and Cortez is really good too. You know, I mean, he's almost like their David Wells of this year, you know, the lefty who just kind of, you know, grinds through, and you look up and it's six, seven innings in, and you know, he's given up maybe one run. So I don't think it was too big of a decision, but, you know, I think the bigger development last night was just that they were able to cobble together a couple plus innings from their bullpen, which remains kind of a mess, and I think is eventually, you know, going to come up and bite them. But I think this is working out well, and that they can, you know, use this Guardian series to try to kind of work that out a little bit. And not to totally discount Cleveland. I mean, Bieber could really pitch great on Thursday and get them back into it. But, they just look like they don't have enough punch to stay up with the Yankees. So, sometimes teams need to start to get on a roll, and maybe the Yankees can do that in this series.
There's so much statistical data that you can get out of a 162-game season. Are the Yankees and Astros that much further than the four teams that had to go through the wild card round?
I think the Astros are.
just because, and it's not so much like, you know, this much more slug or this or that. It's just the way they're constructed, you know, and the performances, the kind of predictive performances they get out of people. I mean, Yordan Alvarez, absolute worthy MVP candidate. I mean, he's, you know, beyond Ohtani and Judge, he is the AL MVP. To me, the difference maker between these two teams is Christian Javier, who, and I was a little surprised Dusty brought him in. I think they were down two, three runs when they brought him in yesterday. He ended up giving up a home run himself, but, you know, just a devastating power arm that they, it looks like they're going to choose to deploy him from the bullpen. We forget, but the Yankees had a guy named Michael King a few months ago,
right,
who was just dominant and, suffered a dislocated elbow. He's been out since roughly June or so, but, you know, they were kind of the same kind of guys in terms of what they would give the team this postseason, and the Astros still have their guy, and he covered a lot of outs for them. And, I think the Astros are that daunting. I think the Yankees could be, but, you know, right now just a lot of things aren't clicking as smoothly as they are for, you know, the Yankees as they are for Houston.
I know that the whole line about, you know, momentum is the next day's starter, I kind of get that, but I can't imagine, how do you regroup after getting Verlander out of the game and having a big lead, and then one swing you find yourself, we didn't get the game that for most of the game we thought we were getting?
Really tough. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, they got to the playoffs. They found out about what it's like to play in the playoffs. They beat the Blue Jays. It's great, but this is something entirely different that, you know, pretty sure nobody on that team, maybe Carlos Santana, has experienced, you know, and it's just devastating. In addition to just, you know, I mean, they got to Andrés Muñoz, who is their, you know, obviously their untouchable, setup guy. They got to Paul Sewald, and obviously they roughed up Robbie Ray there. So it's sort of like, you know, okay, you know, this ground we're on suddenly feels a little bit shaky. So, you know, this is the biggest start of Luis Castillo's life by far, surpassing his biggest start of his life that was just last week. You know, this is going to be a little different, I think, you know, just because the Astros will have that momentum. It looks pretty wild down there, and it's such an experienced playoff team. So, obviously a must win, because I don't think there's any way they'd win three in a row against Houston, especially without Castillo. So they got to win this one, and we'll see if Castillo is as great as it seems he is. He certainly seemed that way against Toronto, and now they really, really need him.
We've gone down this road with the Dodgers before, this obviously being an 111-win team, so they've had the more wins of any of these Dodger playoff teams that we've seen in the World Series and win World Series and whatnot. Is there some things, though, that are different than, is this just the usual Dodgers, or is this the better Dodgers?
So it's interesting because, you know, the names are so different, and, it was around August or so, I kind of came to the conclusion, like, you know what? I don't care who the names are. These guys are good, you know.
Yeah.
Tyler Anderson is good.
Yeah.
You know, Evan Phillips is good. And for all those sort of bullpen pratfalls they've had in the Kershaw era, you know, if you go back, 15 years, you know, I think what we saw last night was really significant. You know, you saw four guys come in and just do their job, and you could kind of see the emotion from them. Not that they doubted themselves, but you wait so long knowing that everything is coming down to a game like last night, and it kind of is. I mean, not only do you need to get out of the series, but you need to line things up. You need to, you know, nobody wants to go seven games. That's a tough way to get through October. So for Vezia and Phillips and Gratterall, and then Chris Martin, veteran reliever, and Dave Roberts says it could look different every night. You know, right now it looks like he might be their postseason closer. Amazing. I think he went from a 4.3 ERA in Chicago, traded to LA, and now he had like a 1.3 ERA. They're clearly doing the right things with him, doing their Dodger magic. It's amazing kind of what they've concocted. But yeah, I just think they are that good. And, not to say they won't have any hiccups, not to say Darvish couldn't throw a little bit of a wrench in things tonight. But, even if the names aren't known, who cares? You know, they're performing really well, and just, keep the pedal to the metal and hope that most nights your offense will slug your way into, not having to stress so much like they did last night.
What is the baseball strategical thought when it comes to 5-game series? How much different is it when you prepare for a 7-game series? I mean, you might have to ask your ace to come back way sooner in a 5-game series than a 7-game series, but what is the overall feeling of how do we approach these games in a 5-game set than a 7-game set?
Yeah, I mean, you can leave off a starting pitcher maybe from the playoff roster, bring in another bullpen arm. In most years, your game one starter can go game four, that kind of thing. But the off days are so funny this year, just with the way they're trying to cram it in, that it's going to be a little bit more different from that. But you look at what most notably 2018, 2019, the Red Sox and Nationals, what they were able to do with bringing their starters in relief, when you're talking about Rick Porcello and Max Scherzer and Patrick Corbin, a couple of others throughout that playoff run. That started in the wild card round. So it's kind of a matter of how do we want to play this for the next few weeks. And there's a lot of different ways to go about it. This year is so unique because of sort of the lockout mandated schedule. It's pretty funky. So you definitely have a mind to go to the hook sooner. I was amazed in the wild card round how many 7-inning pitching performances we saw, because typical in this day and age is like 4 1/3 innings, even if it's only a 2-2 game. Maybe we'll see a bit of a trend back to letting starters go, or maybe we just happen to have a set of starting pitchers in these playoffs that are capable of going a little deeper. So, yeah, it's everything is definitely compressed, and the sense of urgency is certainly heightened, and the emphasis is on deep starting pitching is a little less, just because you're probably not going to need four guys.
I was kind of looking this over, and when this all kind of came about after the weekend, and I was looking at it, and I went, wait a minute, hold on. We've got three of these series that include divisional opponents, like teams that played 19 times during the regular season. Is that add a little element to it? Is that familiarity an attraction to these series, or is it sort of like we're seeing the same thing? We've seen this before many times.
I think it's good. I think it's kind of fun because it instills a certain fearlessness in the inferior team. I think the Phillies did well. I think they were 8-11 against the Braves. Not too bad.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, we've seen these guys. Let's do it again. And then with the Dodgers, I think there is that mental edge they're hoping to maintain. I think they were 14-5.
14-5, yeah.
Yeah, 23 of the last 28 over the last few years against them. So it takes on a different dimension there. So I think it's kind of fun, and I think it's helpful to if you are the lower seeded team, if you are on the road, we've been here so many times. We know the name of the clubhouse attendance. We know what time the bus has to leave, all that kind of stuff, I think it does make it a little more prone to potential upsets maybe.
All right, Gabe, always good talking to you, my friend. Thanks a lot as we head into game twos today. Thank you, my man.
You got it. One game at a time.
I hear you. Gabe Lax, USA Today on the baseball playoffs. And again, these guys that cover this sport, especially nationally, like Gabe, Steve Gardner, a lot of these guys that we talk to, these are long days. I mean, you watch all of these games, paying attention to all these games. They start at like, 1 in the afternoon Eastern time? They run all the way through until past midnight. It's a long day of watching four games. But this is the type of year. But like I was saying earlier, this is like it's neat to see the Dodgers. They just keep beating San Diego all the time. This is their 15-5. That was their 20th meeting of the season. They are 15-5. But as he mentioned, the Phillies, here's a team that, had struggled, like he said, pushing a boulder up a hill, finally find something. But they went 8-11 against the Braves, which is not a bad record for a team going up against the defending World Series champion. So there's three of these matchups that are divisional matchups where you see guys a lot. Cleveland and the Yankees only played six times during the regular season, six times. So it's not like the Guardians, I should say, have seen Aaron Judge a bunch of times. They kind of know how to pitch to him. They got him out a few times yesterday. So baseball playoffs, it's always a fun time. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. Thanks to Gabe Lax. Good hour of guests at Brent Hubbs of the Tennessee Vols Network. You can go to our Facebook page. You go to Sports Map Radio. You can catch all of it on a podcast if you missed any one of them. My wife and I went into one of the hardware stores today to pick up something for the house. Guess what? Christmas stuff is already out. The Christmas decorations are already out. The Halloween stuff is still kind of there, but not like the Halloween stuff. I mean, the Christmas stuff. I know, I get it. We complain about this every year, but it is daunting. Can I just enjoy fall for 3 seconds?
Not anymore.
Can I just enjoy this time of year for 2 seconds? I was telling my wife, though, I was like, have you noticed any, like, Halloween specials, like when we were kids on TV? Because I don't watch TV anymore. I just kind of watch a couple of channels, and that's it. She's like, no, not at all.
Because they're all on Freeform now.
They're all on Freeform.
They're all on 31 Nights of Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. Is that what's going on Freeform? 31
yeah,
Nights of Halloween?
31 Nights of Halloween. So if you.
Am I getting Hocus Pocus on that?
You're getting Hocus Pocus, Night Before Christmas, or
oh,
Nightmare
that's a good
Before
one.
Christmas.
Yeah, with Jack Skellington.
What else?
One.
Corpse Bride,
right.
Beetlejuice. I mean,
am I getting
all of
the
them.
Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, or is that on
no,
Apple TV?
I don't know
still?
When that comes around.
I think that's still on Apple TV. I think they still. I don't know. Man, those were good times when I was a kid. I remember like the Garfield Halloween special.
Yes.
It'd be on like Wednesday at 8. Wow, this is wonderful. Halloween. Can't even enjoy it anymore. It's gone.